This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Hello and good morning. Thank you for listening to the Morning Run on Thursday, the first day of December. I'm Melissa Idris, and I've got Gerard Kutin here with me, ready to go at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, ready to go, ready to go.
Raring to go as well.
And, you know, I just can't wait for that weekend to come.
It's only Thursday. All right.
What do you mean it's only Thursday? There's between Thursday and the weekend only stands Friday.
Well, you know, Thursday has just started. So
essentially,
there's still two working days. Yeah, we're over the hill, as you like to call it, hump day, isn't it?
So just me. I said millions around the world call it hump day.
I said to Julian on, I think it was Tuesday morning, I said, boy, Jules, it's been such a long week. Then I thought, oh, wait, hang on. It's only Tuesday, so, you know. Okay, well, we've got lots of news and interviews coming your way right here in the Morning Run, all the way from 6 to 10 a.m. Sharad, you're going to be speaking to Bala Pomale, the CEO of IPG Media Brands, on The Breakfast Grill. And he's newly appointed, so hopefully we can get kind of some insight on how he plans to take this advertising agency into the future.
Yeah, so he's, as you said, CEO, but he's the CEO of the Malaysian branch of IPG Media Brands, which, of course, is a global brand. It's a kind of a holding entity and kind of overarching entity that has many other media groups under it, and I think they look to find some sort of synergies between the different assets they have in this particular segment of the media. My questions really, come from the kind of debates and challenges that the media industry is facing, not primarily from the business angle, but also from the question of, you know, what is it that it's happening to public culture, meaning, you know, what's the quality of our understanding of the world as it's refracted through the media and such. So that's the kind of conversation I'm going to be having with Bala Pomale.
Well, fantastic.
Morning.
I mean, look, the advertising industry is not as how we knew it to be in the Mad Men years, right? And it's evolved since. In fact, it's evolved so much that for me, it's almost unrecognizable in the age of social media, because when you think about influencers and social media and how they are now paid for certain campaigns,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. The other thing, of course, is what you mentioned just now. Mad Men, of course, is not a documentary; it's a fictional account of
Madison Avenue, advertising agencies back in the '50s
in the U.S. And so the question is, if it accurately depicts, you know, what happened then and the way in which media operated, and advertising in particular. And I wondered, you know, there's historical accuracy. It's just that the power of television and this power of very popular TV series like Mad Men and their capacity to shape our understanding of the world. I mean, eventually everybody's going to refer to that world again, refracted through a fictional account of that time, right. You know. And of course, you know, I think we also know that, you know, advertising really has its roots in the early part of the 20th century. Edward Bernays, the father of public relations and advertising, was a nephew of Sigmund Freud, the famous Viennese psychoanalyst.
Wow.
Yeah. And he really wrote the book on public relations. You know, he, in fact, coined the term, you know, coming out of the First World War and having worked for what was then called the propaganda department of governments. He worked for the American government. And, he launched the first campaign to encourage women to smoke.
Was it actually called the propaganda department?
Yes.
Was it actually called that?
Yeah, without any iron.
A spade a spade, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because we've now come to understand propaganda in particular ways.
Yes.
Right? But then it really just meant, communicating the ideas of government.
Right.
And it didn't have the negative connotation it has today. And so Edward Bernays was a very clever man. And he took many of the insights that his uncle had into the human psyche in the age of mass politics and, you know, applied it brilliantly. and you know, influence a whole generation. So,
oh my God, this is like a little miniature history lecture.
Did I go on for a little too long?
But that's fascinating because I didn't know of the history. But you know, something to read up on.
Yeah,
what was it called? Who's Edward Bernays? Bernays like the sauce.
No, I don't think like the sauce.
That's Bolognese, but I'm talking about Bernays.
Bernays. Yeah, no, I know, but no, I don't. Let me see. Check the spelling on that. Yeah.
Well, okay. We'll come back to that. But while you are doing that, let me finish.
No, not spell with a Y. So Bernays.
Okay.
Edward Bernays.
Fantastic. Well, fall into that rabbit hole if you're interested. You can Google for more info. But tune into The Breakfast Grill if you're keen to know more about how Bala Pomale of IPG Brands Malaysia views the current advertising industry. And after the grill at 8:35 a.m. on Current Affairs, we will be continuing the conversation we started yesterday about the recent UPSR results. Now, just to remind you, the Standard 6 exam results have not been well received when it was announced. It turns out that only 4,000 out of 400,000 students achieved all A's, and that somehow created quite some concern, I would say.
Yeah,
concern.
And I think some sort of soul searching, kind of call for an evaluation. I do think that, you know, Melissa, when I think about what an A is, it's not a naturally occurring thing in the world. You know, it really is about how assessors determine. In fact, in many ways, assessors could give everybody A's if they wanted to, right? I mean, often assessors use a bell curve to distribute grades. So you have a thick and heavy middle, and then you have a very light, tail end. So you don't give much A's and you don't give that many F's, but, you know, you give everybody a middling grade.
Well, you're speaking from someone who has been in academia. You've been a teacher before, Sharad.
With deep regret, I think.
Okay, so putting yourself in the shoes of, say, Standard 6 teachers, would you be worried about this, the fact that only 1% got straight A's?
No, I think, we often focus on the high achievers. And I think maybe to our own detriment, the idea is that our kids getting a solid foundation by the time they finish primary school, whether it's numeracy or literacy or critical thinking skills. And the real question is, how does that capture? Is that captured by this grading system and the exam, this particular exam? I'm not sure if it is. Honestly,
that is precisely the question that we're going to be asking today on Current Affairs, whether achieving good grades guarantees success later in life. If Malaysians are still fixated with this all A's mentality, we're going to be speaking to some parent teacher groups on Current Affairs today. So stay tuned for that. A continuation of our look into the recent UPSR results, 8:35 a.m. And at 9:35 on Ringgit and Cents today, Tunku Ali Zakri alias from EPF will be on the show. And this week, an interesting topic we're going to be focusing on, health as an often overlooked investment in retirement planning. Because much like compounding interest, you can see your investment in health, later in life. It has to start early, though. It has to start early, and you can kind of reap the benefits later in life. But often we overlook health aspects, because it takes a backseat to our financial obligations.
Well,
important.
You know, absolutely. And, I look forward to that discussion as always because of my, I think, weak foundations of financial literacy. And I think that's something that we should also kind of encourage at a foundational level in education, media literacy, financial literacy, all the real life skills that kids will need when they go out, not just ideals about how to treat each other. I don't know what kids do in civics class or ethics class or moral class or religious class. I mean, if you read the number of bullying cases that happen in religious schools, it was just one that went viral a couple of days ago, was it yesterday? Teaching people what is right is not the same as them then going out and doing right. I mean, there is a gap between, the knowledge of what is right and actually the practice of it. And so enough of, I think, you know, just filling people with these platitudes. Mm. What about getting them to, you know, kind of real practice and real understanding of the world?
And because Tengku Ali Zakri is from the EPF, he's going to give us some insight as to how EPF can help with your with investments into healthcare, you know, your insurance policies, your medical bills, all that. So stay tuned for that on Ringgit and Sense, 9:35 a.m. But very quickly, it's 10 minutes past 6 and we want to take a look at some of the news that came out overnight. Ron 95, 97 and diesel, all the prices for the pump prices for December have fallen by 5 cents. That was starting midnight last night. And it's now 190 for Ron 95, but that's per litre. 225 per litre for Ron 97 and 185 per litre for diesel. I have to say this comes as a bit of a respite because last month's pump prices were the priciest yet we've seen in 2016.
Well, you know, this, of course, affects all of us, including people like myself who don't drive. I mean, I don't necessarily kind of run to the petrol pump every time I hear news of the prices going up and stand in line. But it does affect, you know, the taxis I take, the Grab car I take, or the Uber, whatever it is I take to get myself around. And I worry sometimes about the knock-on effects of, you know, the high, with, you know, everything from your groceries.
I'd like to also point out that even though December pump prices have fallen by 5 cents, last night OPEC, the oil cartel, they reached their first supply cut agreement in 8 years. Now, we've been talking about this on the Morning Run for a couple of weeks now, and I myself have expressed some skepticism that they could reach a deal. But lo and behold, they have agreed to reduce output by 1.2 million barrels a day. And this is expected to, I guess, increase oil prices in the future and kind of narrow the gap of between supply and demand, the oversupply that we've seen the past 2 years. Now, what will this mean? Because oil prices have been hovering between $40 to $54 per barrel in the past few months. So I think since March this year, whether it will mean higher, I think it will mean, it will definitely mean higher prices, higher petrol, oil prices next year. What will that mean for us as consumers paying for petrol at the pump? That will definitely mean higher prices there as well. So we'll be talking more about that throughout the day, this first supply cut. I think a lot of us were proven wrong by OPEC, Saudi Arabia coming to agree to this deal.
Well, you know, there were people, you know, commentators, you know, on Bloomberg and such, saying that, you know, everyone has suffered. I mean, all the stakeholders in this discussion have hurt from the lack of a kind of concerted effort to control the output of crude, and that he believed that not only will a deal be achieved, but Saudi Arabia would cut its would suffer the greatest cuts because Saudi Arabia, in many ways, ramped up more you know in production of oil before, and that Iran would be allowed to because of the embargo and how it suffered under the embargo to be allowed to give it. So I mean, some people said, well, you know, maybe common sense and enlightened self-interest would kick in among the stakeholders and they would come together because this policy was hurting everybody in the, at the end
of
the day.
It only took 2 years since they first started that, you know, produce as you will policy. So it took a couple of years for common sense to kick in. Also, some news last night, the man who created the Big Mac, Jim Deligatti, he has died at the age of 98. So the man who created Big Mac, Sharad.
Well,
his contribution is immeasurable.
Well, yeah, only because the Big Mac as kind of a burger. I mean, it's really quite unremarkable as a food, but because it's associated with
it's
McDonald's.
Like the double patty. That was pioneering technology back in the day.
You know, like, you know, the drink that we like to boast about in Malaysia where you put coffee, Milo, and I don't know, something Nestum all together.
Not Nestum. Nestlé.
Yeah, those two things. I mean, it doesn't take much imagination. I mean, a single patty or two pats, doubling it down on, isn't an act of genius, Melissa.
You know, you'd be surprised. There was this man in Australia who created the hamburger, sausage dog, hot dog. So with the hamburger patty that looks, and then you have the sausage running in between. That was patented, man. I mean, that's intellectual.
Yeah, well, you know,
property.
I think anything can be patented, but the question is, patented.
Patented.
Yeah. But the real question is it any value to humankind? I think what, of course, people do know is that he lived a really long life. And
yes,
the question is whether he ate his own food, because one thing that burgers have not become well known for is their health benefits. So you don't think of a burger and think, yes.
Live till 98.
Yeah. So, it's not clear that if he invented it, he actually even liked what he invented. Because it's possible that, yeah.
Very good point. You don't know whether he was proud of that invention.
Oh, he might have been, but he might not have been eating it.
True. 6:16 right now. We'll be back with more stories after this on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was You Know, I Know by John Lee Hooker. You Know, I Know. That I'm Melissa Idris. Ibrahim Sani is here with me, as well as Sharad Kutan. 6:22 on the clock right now.
Talk about smooth waking up to John Lee Hooker. Mm. And I just,
Good morning to Muhammad Wahihelmi. You tweeted in good morning to us. We will respond back by saying good morning to you on air.
Yeah. That's a rather formal way of putting it, Melissa.
Good morning.
Just good morning, lah.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. All right. Well, just a quick continuation with the news. Now, last night, there was some breaking news that a leaked tape of a recording of the air traffic tower conversation between the pilot and the air traffic tower. It's been leaked, and what was in that tape was heard that the pilot was repeatedly requesting permission to land due to total electric failure and lack of fuel. And I'm referring to the Brazil plane crash that happened a few days ago. So it's come to light now that the pilot said that the plane had a total lack of fuel. It was suspected that there had was something to do with the fuel, because as the plane crashed, there was no big explosion.
Mm, okay. So this basically removes the fact that it is technical error on the plane itself. It also is not about the bad weather. It's simply, you know, I think this is human error, because you know, running out of fuel is solely and wholly the responsibility of the pilot.
Yeah, except it does say total electric failure. Is that an electrical failure?
Yeah, it could be
a technical. But anyway, I think at this point, the tragedy is compounded if the facts are that, you know, it could have been avoided, right? I mean, bad weather is bad weather, but when you have something like, you know, you didn't refuel, or you'd forgotten to do something that, you know, of a nature that could have been avoided, then of course the tragedy is compounded. I mean, the fans are going to be hurting for a long time. I think about the kids who had all these heroes. I mean, how terrible a lesson it is for them.
It's worth noting that there are survivors. Six people actually survived out of the 77. And this is basically the reason that they have been flying low altitude at about 9,000 feet, as opposed to a cruising altitude of, say, you know, 27,000 feet and above, let's say 3,000 or 35,000. So the plane was ready to land, or wanting to land, but I don't know why the air traffic controller couldn't reach to the aircraft.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of the Steve Irwin situation, you know, because that, you know, he was a naturalist. He did that wildlife show on television. He was he was much loved
for
kids.
The crocodile hunter.
Yes, and not crocodile Dundee. Well, who was a kind of celeb? This is actually a guy who was teaching kids about the world, you know, and wildlife. Steve Irwin. He died in, well, it's about 10 years now since he's died. But, you know, for them, again,
years.
You know, kids grow up with television. They grow up with these personalities. And then And then when they die, what do parents do? I mean, I remember I watched Sesame Street. I can't remember the time I watched
Who
Sesame Street.
Who died on Sesame
Eventually
Street?
Eventually somebody died. I think Mr. Hooper died
something
like
that. Oh, yes. Oh, I remember that episode.
Yeah, and, you know, and it's a yam is the only reproductive member of the team.
Again.
Which I
Sorry,
do,
I myself watch
Sesame Street. And Mr. Hooper episode was really troubling me, actually. That was the first time, get this, that somebody put, I learned about death, right? So that's
remember
crazy.
When Big Bird couldn't comprehend that Mr. Hooper was dead? Oh, that was sad.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, of course, you know, for us who grew up with pets, the pets are also a way in which parents can teach kids about it's easier
because the death of a pet is definitive and you don't have to tell much because, the child actually sees it.
But how as a parent do you teach your children to deal with the feelings, right? So in my family, we had funerals for our pets, hamster funerals, cat funerals, funerals.
We do. Remember my wife, the story of my wife, reversing and hitting our cat. She couldn't operate for one day, right? She just broke down. She took emergency leave, which I can understand why. But my father, who was living with us, or is still living with us, took the cat out to the park, brought all my three kids with him, including the young one, the 1.5 years old at that time. And we actually had a funeral. No prayers or anything. It's just, just a ceremony, a service to actually commemorate the death of a cat.
It's important. I think it's important.
Did you grow up with pets, Melissa?
Yes, but I didn't know that the cat had died. Tiger Rudin had died.
You must have... Something must have been up. I mean, you must have sensed something.
I thought he ran away.
Oh, you thought he ran away. Okay.
So I'm still dealing with the grief, guys. It's been many
Ran
many
away
decades.
To heaven. Oh, hell.
Okay, well, I came across a story that was triggered by something you said yesterday, Sharad. Now, yesterday we were having a conversation with Julian about... handwritten wills, handwritten signatures. So we're talking about ironclad wills and how the need to sign that and pass that document around. You were telling me a story about your family and having to send the will from different family member to different family member around the world. And we came across this story that the BBC had done a focus on, and the BBC claims, is the day of the handwritten will, a handwritten signature over? I mean, are we no longer going to be practicing signing our names in little notebooks when we were kids?
Yeah, like I mean, getting, I can't remember when I last used a check, which requires a signature. And I can't, and now, with the credit card system changing and the use of PIN, that's going to also become redundant. So, yeah, maybe signatures are going to be less and less important. Though there's a lot of, signing off on little stubs of paper, like if you use immigration or something.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. But it's worth noting that for the corporate structure, the resignation letter, for the longest of time, still needed a handwritten letter to ensure that there's no forgery. Because
You can just shout across the room,
quit? I could pretend to be you, Sharad, and write your resignation letter. And you won't have a job anymore.
That's why you need handwritten signatures.
Why would I do that?
But they would have to... wouldn't they want to confirm? If I was looking very like a happy puppy walking around after I resigned, well, people might read that as proof positive that I won.
Okay, so but you think about what the signature is. It's not just you signing on something to say I agree to this document, right? But also, say the John Hancock of celebrities. You know, when you ask for, hey, can I have your autograph? It's no longer the case. It's now, can I have a selfie? Isn't it?
Yeah,
selfie is the new signature.
If you go to a book festival, you might take a selfie, but you still probably want that book because it's printed on paper to be autographed. That's one thing. I also think of the fact I went to an art auction recently, and I remember a lot of discussion around pieces of art that did not have the signature of the artist on it, and in its place, the auctioneer said they had a letter certification from the artist authenticating the work, because the signature authenticates the work. It lends
credibility.
Yeah. Well, it suggests that this is actually the work of the particular
person. Ownership, yeah. Okay. Well, we'll be back with more discussion after the 6:30 news with Lynn Mark on BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run 6:40 right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Gerard Kutin and Ibrahim Sani. Now, the couple who was depicted in this video that went viral for obstructing or assaulting a Shah Alam City Council officer from carrying out her duties, well, past couple of days, they were slapped with a 14-day jail sentence for the offence. Now, the court also ordered a 3,000 ringgit fine per person, failing which they would have to serve yet another 7 days in jail. So I guess if you haven't seen the video that went viral, perhaps we could describe the video a little bit. It's a two-minute video.
Well, you know, Melissa, what it shows is one of those ticketing officers you see around in car parks, hemmed in between two cars and then two individuals. One, a short lady who seems to be holding on to the back of the officer's blouse or blazer, if you like. And then a larger man, I mean, like really large, mm-hmm. And, you know, slightly overnourished, perhaps somebody who feeds on Big Macs a lot. And he is sort of not allowing the officer to come out and, you know, kind of move away from the car. And he is trying to take, and the as it were, the pretext seems to be wanting to take a photograph of her with his phone. But what you also note is obviously somebody is filming this entire, you know, drama, as well as there's yet another officer who's communicating with the officer who's hemmed in. And, you know, the officer tries to leave without engaging those two individuals. But towards the end of the video, you do see her kind of like speaking to him and, you know, and then somebody else intervenes. That's what I saw. And, you know, I was shocked by this. I mean, it's one of those things where I'm asking myself, what did the couple think they were going to accomplish?
Right.
They thought using the I'm taking a photograph of you thing was going to intimidate the officer as if she was somehow doing something wrong and not recognizing that they themselves were being videotaped and therefore their identities were going to be established. And whatever they were doing was clearly criminal.
Well, okay, so I don't...
Or at least unethical.
Okay, so I don't think the thought process went that far, Sherrod. I don't think
this
that...
This is what Big Macs do to you.
So I don't think that they realize that their identities...
Yeah, apologies to McDonald's and that multi-billion dollar industry.
Gloss over that, but okay. So I don't think they thought that they would be publicly shamed for this video. No one thinks about that at the moment, right? Yeah,
but why is that?
So I have to say though, I had the same reaction with as you when I watched the video. My first thought was, what did they think they were going to achieve? Intimidation, that this officer would retract the summons that she had given them, that they could intimidate her into not doing her job. I also felt the same way, but what really disturbed me about it was the kind of the physicality of it. It got quite physical. There was some tugging. There was some kind of in your face.
Yeah. So the
personal...
woman tugged. The woman driver, the owner of the car, was tugging at the officer. And as I said, you know, her partner, husband, whatever it was using his large body. And maybe it looked larger than it was because, you know,
she's tiny.
Also,
the officer was also.
Well,
quite
actually,
petite.
The woman was even tinier. The non-officer woman.
So in the video, the man was, as you said, Sherrod, trying to say that give me your name and also I just want to take one picture. He just repeats that whole thing.
Why did you want to take a picture
now
of an officer doing a duty
at the courthouse? The cameraman from the press was
it press?
The because they were at the courthouse, right? Because of the verdict and
the
sentencing.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The pressman and the cameraman were shouting at the couple saying, come on, show us your face. We just want to take one picture. So they're repeating the exact thing that the man said to the officer. These pressmen are not shouting, just basically telling the guy, why are you hiding your face? We want to take your picture as well.
And what's also come out of this is, I mean, first, my instinctive fear is that this is going to be racialized, right? So somebody's going to frame it as a racial issue. Then the other thing that I think emerged out of it, and this was quite interesting, I didn't expect this, was that somebody had posted a picture purportedly of that large man in a Bursay T-shirt. So saying, oh, this is a Bursay supporter. And
really?
See how, yes. And so, you know, in the course of the life of social media, these things, I mean, I'm not quite sure, you know, large men, some large men look like, you know, other large men. And so, you know, you maybe can't tell the difference. I mean, you know,
not all large people look the same.
Listen, no, it's true. It's true. I mean, I'm a large person, you know. And so I was thinking, I could walk out one day and be mistaken for this. I was going to use a four-letter word, but I can't. You know, but, you know, the fool, I was going to say.
A fool.
Yeah,
you can say a fool.
And,
That's
no, but
not
it was
good.
Interesting. I just think it's amazing how these scenes get framed, right? So it could be framed in a racial way. It could be framed in a gendered fashion, or in this case, even politically.
Okay, so I have to. My question is: did it have to go on social media? Did it have to become viral? Because the officer, the Shah Alam office, City Council officer, she filed a police report. So she took the correct and appropriate course of action after this altercation, right? But yet the person who had filmed this altercation felt the need to post it on social media. And once it went on the you know, wiles of social media, netizens got outraged and they tracked down who this officer was. They tracked down who that woman was. They found the police report that she filed. And
What's wrong with that? I mean, I think
that's... It was like wildfire.
Yeah, and this, of course, is the nature of social media. I mean, and you know, sometimes it could lead to have some good effect. Remember the case of those mentally handicapped or disabled people in a home in Ipoh, and some kids had gone there for outing, and then they took photographs, put it up, and it went viral, and it led to an investigation as to why these individuals were being, as it were, caged. And I'm using, you know, air quotes here, and so, you know, some good comes out of this kind of social media thing, don't you think, Ibrahim?
I don't know, because I was very recently actually subjected to this kind of treatment, right, where somebody misrepresented my scenario of how I carried my you know, my activities, and because this person has misrepresented me, there was a viral thing going on, and you know, he put it up on Facebook, he put it up on WhatsApp. Facebook, he pulled it down, and it's easily retractable. You can't share something that has been pulled down. But on WhatsApp, it's gone. It's gone to the Netherlands. Sorry.
The Nether region.
The Nether regions. Perhaps it has gone to
the Netherlands too. No. Yeah.
Not to right.
And you know, you can't pull it back.
But okay, so the question is, you know, you weigh the two, right? Against you know, if you want to stop, you know, say the thing became racialized, right? And then people say, you know, oh, look at social media, it's, you know, inflaming racial sentiments, and it framed it. I mean, just two annoying, obnoxious people against an officer, you know, an enforcement officer, and that's all it was.
Right.
I mean, for me, it's really about temperament and a lack of, you know, maybe potty training. I don't know what it is, right?
Potty training,
you know, on the part of these two individuals. I mean, and you know what? They're going to learn a lot of that in jail, you know. So for me, it's like, it's not a racial issue, but of course people will do that. But is that any reason to stifle a free speech that happens in social media?
Well, I don't know if I see it the same way you do. I didn't think that this, you know, once it goes viral, you have absolutely no control over it. And the invasion of someone's privacy is just immense.
Yeah, but so, is it fatal?
And it's also a 2-minute video. It's a 2-minute video. It doesn't contextualize anything, right? But, so perhaps there were things that happened before or after that we don't know. No one, I mean, in a 2-minute video, it can be misrepresented. However, I do have to say that if it were, you know, what would have been the right course of action for these two people? If they felt that the officer had wrongly ticketed them, what would have been the right course of action? Clearly, the physicality of it being hemming her into between two cars, that was wrong. Tugging at her shirt, that was wrong. Trying to, you know, put his phone in her face, trying to capture her face, that was wrong.
What about thinking before you act?
Yeah, what could they have done, right? They probably should have gone the official channels and disputed that ticket.
I agree, because I have disputed that, you know, official channel. I and not dispute actually. I parked in a wrong area. MPPJ, for that matter, came and gave me a summons. I immediately went to the Munara MPPJ and I asked them, can I get this revoked? Because I'm a good citizen, and I was ticketed at 1 o'clock.
Oh, so that was what do you call that?
And mind you, they
revoked mercy.
It. Yeah, they revoked it, right? The thing was so fresh; it was still warm. The plasma paper, 1 o'clock, 1:30.
The signature was still fresh.
And they said, yeah, sure.
The corpse was still bleeding.
No worries, bro. Revoked it.
Sorry about the murder. The corpse is still bleeding. I confess to just revoke
the blood
murder charge.
From the, what
this
right.
conversation is well, taking a
yeah,
weird
but,
turn.
No, but I want to ask very quickly, and we're running out of time, but I just want to ask, the pain that you suffer from this kind of, group criticism that comes out of, things going viral, is it fatal? I mean, don't they come, as much as they're very hot when they're hot, isn't it really like, hangat, the Malay's expression, that things, it's only hot for a minute and then it just disappears. Mm-hmm.
Really? You don't think it does something to someone's reputation that,
do you think you suffered a lot of reputational damage from that?
Not me, but my kids. We had to change schools.
Wow. Okay, there you go. Answered your question, Sharad Gooden. 6:51 right now. We've got news coming up in less than 10 minutes, after which I'll speak to analyst Ben Lebrun for an update on the OPEC meeting. OPEC has just agreed to its first supply cut in 8 years. We'll get some analysis for you on that. But first, some music. I Walk on Gilded Splinters by Cher on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.